Okie dokie. Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters Today. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live on WILL AM 580 on this Sunday, December 18th, 2005. Today we have a terrific guest for you, someone I think you're really going to enjoy, someone who's been on the show many times before. Danny Schechter, the news dissector, will be coming to us over the telephone from his pad in New York City, discussing media today and the crucial issues in international politics and how the media is covering them. It's going to be a great show, so please join us today on Media Matters. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news relating to the intersection of media and democracy. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Kimberly Cronick.
The languishing state of digital audio broadcasting in the United States following its introduction more than 2 years ago has spurred America's largest broadcast conglomerates to form an HD Digital Radio Alliance to facilitate the nationwide rollout of digital service. Key to this campaign is the coming of what the alliance calls HD2 multicast side channels. The ability to broadcast multiple program streams on a single radio channel is relatively new to the U.S. digital radio environment. Only after National Public Radio began a crash development of multicasting in 2002 did the feature actually become reality. Expect a digital radio station's main program to reflect its analog equivalent and the side channel to be some variant of the main program format. For example, in May, Infinity Broadcasting's WUSN-FM in Chicago became the first commercial station to digitally multicast. The station's primary format is country, and its side channel is future country, described as an offshoot that skews younger than the station's traditional demographic. Notably, one of the HD Digital Radio Alliance's primary goals is to coordinate the rollout of side channels in such a way as to make sure no station poaches on the format turf of others. What is worst, though, about digital audio broadcasting in the United States is its blatantly proprietary nature. Not only must radio transmitter and receiver manufacturers give a fraction of every sale to Ibiquity, the company that holds the patents on the U.S. HD radio framework, but stations themselves must pay both an upfront licensing fee and recurring royalties to Ibiquity simply for the privilege of broadcasting. This de facto requirement of a second private license to broadcast in the digital future and its attendant implications for access to the airwaves is not yet a subject of any meaningful public discussion. Alternative digital broadcast frameworks do exist, but market momentum is leading regulatory momentum, meaning none are being taken seriously. The HD Digital Radio Alliance initiative is designed to make sure momentum continues in that direction. That the major players in the HD Digital Radio Alliance are also major investors in Ibiquity and its digital radio protocol, and just happen to control so many radio stations as to give them unmatched nationwide audience penetration for their technology of choice, smacks of a cornered market. But think again. Broadcasters are getting anxious to recoup the conservatively estimated $250 million they've sunk into digital radio development over the years, especially in the face of increasing audience erosion from satellite radio, webcasting, and podcasting. If you're still interested in hearing more about digital radio, good luck finding a receiver. Only a handful of models are for sale so far, and none for less than $200.
The Gannett Company, owner of 99 daily newspapers and 21 television stations across the country, is putting part of its local news talk programming up for sale. In many markets, Gannett stations run morning programs which include feature stories and interviews with a variety of guests. In a move toward what it terms advertainment, those stories and guest spots are now up for sale. For $2,500, advertisers can purchase a 5-minute segment on a Gannett station to pimp their product or service. None of the paid-for segments are labeled as advertisements, even though the company promised such disclosure. Currently, advertainment-style morning shows are running on Gannett stations in Atlanta, Cleveland, Denver, and Sacramento, and plans are in the works to launch a similar program in Minneapolis.
In related news, Clear Channel Communications appears to be selling off the naming rights to its radio newsrooms. In Madison, Wisconsin, anchors and reporters at Clear Channel News Talk Station WIBA will be working out of the Amcor Bank News Center come January. This is not the first time a Clear Channel station has sold its newsroom naming rights. A Clear Channel station in Milwaukee christened the Piramax Bank Newsroom in 2004. Company spokespeople say the sponsorship will have no effect on the sound bites its journalists produce.
The U.S. Department of Justice is pushing for legislation that would turn attempting to make unauthorized copies of music and movies into a crime, punishable by time behind bars. The so-called Intellectual Property Protection Act of 2005 also expands the forfeiture powers of law enforcement in copyright infringement cases in a manner similar to how forfeiture powers have been extended in drug cases. So far, the DOJ's recommendations have not found a congressional sponsor.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a joint production of the Illinois Initiative for Media Policy Research at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization dedicated to media democracy. For more information, visit our website at freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie dokie. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live on WILL, AM 580 in beautiful Urbana, Illinois, on a spectacular snowy winter's Sunday afternoon here in the heartland. And today it's a pleasure to have as our guest live on the air someone who needs really no introduction to people who follow the media closely. Danny Schechter is the founder and executive director of MediaChannel.org. He's a longtime television producer, independent filmmaker, and media critic. He's written many books, including The More You Watch, The Less You Know, which I had the privilege of writing a foreword to, Embedded: Weapons of Mass Deception, How the Media Failed to Cover the War in Iraq. He has also got two brand new books out simultaneously, The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy, and also another new book, When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War. And the book, When News Lies, includes a DVD and a script of the feature-length documentary addressing the same issues. So it is my pleasure to welcome Danny Schechter to Media Matters. Danny?
Hey, pleasure to be back with you, Bob.
Yeah, well, you've been staying busy, it looks like. Two books at once. Dealing with Balco or something? What's going on?
You know, it's the Book of the Week Club. But actually, what happened was one was supposed to come out, you know, the When News Lies was supposed to come out, you know, in October, and is coming out, you know, really in stores in January. So both of them sort of hit at the same time through no fault of my own. But here we go. Double barrels of ammunition.
No doubt they're both well worth reading, as I'm a major consumer of yours. And I should point out that people interested in reading Danny Schechter's work need only go to the website mediachannel.org, where your blog, The News Dissector, is constantly updated with coverage of the pressing stories of the day. And let's just, before we get into all the material in your books and that you've been working on the last few months that I want to talk about on the show, let's just talk to a story that's broken in the last couple of days, and one I know you're keenly interested in, which is the revelation that President Bush authorized wiretapping of Americans. What's your take on that, and how would you regard the press coverage of it?
Well, you know, first of all, there's a lot about this we still don't know, even about the story. Apparently, the New York Times reporter who broke the story had actually had the information a year earlier and was saving it for a book. Sound familiar? Sounds a little like Bob Woodward at the Washington Post. In other words, he wasn't even sharing information he had with his own newspaper. So when you delay the reporting of news, I think you have an ethical issue there that we ought to really think through, you know, whether or not reporters who are working on books for their own benefit can hold up on important news. In this case, the story about a massive surveillance ordered by the president, illegally apparently, because it wasn't authorized by any court, no warrants were issued, and yet, you know, is now being defended as necessary in the interests of the war on terror, with very little evidence being provided. This morning, I watched Carl Levin, the senator from Michigan, on the air on We Meet the Press with Tim Russert, basically saying, you know, well, there were no warrants from this FISA court, this internal, you know, security special court. And then I read a report that came out of Josh Marshall's blog, where he actually goes back and finds out how many warrants were ever denied by this court when requested by the government. Apparently, 4 over the course of, 25 years or something like that. So I don't believe this court is extremely zealous in protecting the rights of citizens. But even with that, the Bush administration didn't bother to even seek a judicial approval for what it was doing. And I think this is, obviously it's an impeachable offense, if true, because it abrogates the law. But, of course, the administration is going to spin it in a different way. And interestingly enough, President Bush just happens to be on the air again tonight with a primetime address from the White House, no doubt justifying his policies, the very same policies he justified earlier in the week and then earlier the last week and the week before that and the week before that.
So this is a pretty – I mean, where do you think these revelations, assuming they pan out and they're true – where do they rank in sort of the hierarchy of things President Bush has done that are dubious?
Well, we had the COINTELPRO program under the Nixon government. We had a lot of surveillance going on. I have no reason to believe that surveillance stopped. But, right now, for example, there's a report today that a young man in Dartmouth, I think UMass Dartmouth, not Dartmouth College, but, went to the library to get a copy of one of Mao's books, Mao Zedong's books. And apparently this was monitored by some Homeland Security agency, which then sent 2 agents to his home because the book was on the, quote, watch list. Now, I don't know how many more books are on the watch list, if your books are on it or my books are on it or what have you. But that's
if
that's,
your books are on it, it's a long list.
That's very disturbing. Hey, Bob, I'm just catching up with you, man. I'm trying. I'm not getting there. But, I do think that this is, obviously, it's like taking a rock, and under the rock are all these, kind of worms and vermin and everything else that's been there. And I think there's a lot more to come here. I think we're just at the threshold of this story. We don't know all the full details of it yet, but apparently this administration has operated under this incredible sense of, that it can unilaterally determine what has to be done, quote, to keep America safe. And that has included all of these different, surveillance and the torture and kidnapping and, all these other practices that we've condemned in other countries that seem to be common in terms of the policy that this country applies.
Back during the Clinton years, a Republican-controlled House and Senate were able, when presented with information that perhaps President Clinton, before being in office or while in office, had broken laws or told lies under oath, to subsidize and sort of broad open inquiries into President Clinton's behavior before being in office and while in office that led to the Monica Lewinsky incident and the impeachment of President Clinton. Does this rank in your mind as being as important as the Lewinsky incident?
And I think the violation of the Constitution is a little bit more serious than semen on someone's dress. Yes, I don't think it's, I think it's not in the same league. I think it's in a league of its own and a more important league. But, the problem here is who's going to take on this president? The Democrats seem extremely timid. It was revealed today, for example, that the Democratic leaders were all briefed on this program. Whether they were or not, we still don't know. But that they themselves gave it their assent, they're okay. Nobody said a word.
They weren't briefed on the specifics of who would be wiretapped or monitored, but rather briefed that the president is doing this without getting anyone's permission, going against the law.
Well, their interpretation, the law is sort of this sanctimoniously applied and selectively applied concept. You broke the law, The invasion of Iraq has violated, I can't tell you how many international legal agreements, but that doesn't seem to be considered breaking the law. Breaking the law is what they say it is, when they agree to having said it at all. So, it's like an Alice in Wonderland situation.
We're talking today with Danny Schechter on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Danny Schechter is the news dissector, the founder and executive editor of MediaChannel.org, a longtime television producer, independent filmmaker and media critic and author, a wonderful writer. Danny Schechter has been around for a long time. As I said earlier, I had the privilege of writing the foreword to his semi-memoir, The More You Watch, The Less You Know.
Well, listen to this, Bob. In the foreword to this book of mine, When News Lies, which is about media complicity in the Iraq War, basically arguing that the media has committed crimes in this, in the coverage of this conflict, not simply made mistakes. At any rate, in the forward, Michael Wolff, who's the media writer for Vanity Fair, refers to me as the 2,000-year-old media critic. I guess invoking kind of the spirit of something that Mel Brooks once did, you know, the 2,000-year-old man, that I've been around that long.
Well, you've been around at least a good 40 years that I know about, and a storied life. I wish we had more time to go into that. I urge people to read that book, The More You Watch, The Less You Know, if you're interested in the extraordinary history of Danny Schachter. As a civil rights activist, as well as a journalist. But one of the beats you worked on, and I think some of the work I bet you're proudest of, was your work on human rights television with programming for PBS in the late 80s, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's in the 90s, actually.
In the 90s, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, this was an attempt to do a human rights television series, obviously, after the WMD excuse was collapsed, as shown to be false, and Iraq, the administration, talked about human rights and abuses by Saddam, which is why, you know, it was justified to remove him.
This is in the first war.
Yeah, and, you know, we of course have been doing programming about human rights and human rights abuses around the world, and also U.S. complicity in those abuses, as in the United States selling some of that gas that it denounced Saddam for using against the Kurds, who actually was provided for by the United States. And so, you know, we try to point out some of these inconsistencies and hypocrisies, because if you talk about human rights, you have to apply one standard. The same standard that you apply to another country has to apply to us, and you can't be selective about it. And we did. And we did the same thing when we covered Cuba. We, you know, talked about human rights abuses in Cuba, and we talked about human rights abuses in Israel and Palestine and in the United States. So, yeah, we tried to do this, but we ran into a buzzsaw of opposition with public television at the time, telling us human rights is an insufficient organizing principle for a TV series, okay? Unlike cooking. Cooking is a organizing principle for a cooking series, you know, but human rights somehow was considered illegitimate as a series and still probably is. I mean, when I did my film WMD, Weapons of Mass Deception, I went to public television after meeting the president, who told me she thought it was pretty good. And I got back a letter from a junior intern of some kind, basically telling me, thank you for submitting it. We've not chosen to use it. No explanation given, no discussion of their rationale, criteria, anything else. And this has been the experience that many filmmakers have had in trying to get out dissenting programming of various kinds. If your name isn't Michael Moore and you don't have a kind of a track record of making a lot of money, it's very difficult to get films into theaters, to get a counter-narrative out there. And that's why I think we're all fighting so hard to do something about our media system, because when you're fed a particular line, whether you lived in Stalinist Russia or Bush America, you know, it only gives you one point of view. It doesn't offer other perspectives, diverse viewpoints and the like. And that's what we, you know, believe in. We believe that that's part of the democratic debate, that people should be exposed to a wide range of information.
Danny Schachter, our guest today on Media Matters. The number here, if you'd like to call with a question, 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Danny Schachter has two new books out simultaneously. The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy is one. The other, When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War. We're going to be talking a lot during the program today about the press coverage of the Iraq War, the media role, the U.S. media role in the Iraq War, along with a host of other issues. So please do call in with your questions or comments for Danny Schachter here at Media Matters. Now, Danny, in the meantime, I do want to go back to the human rights issue, because just this past week we had probably the most celebrated execution in the United States in quite some time, in years, out in California. And I know that around the world, capital punishment is considered a major human rights issue elsewhere. What was your take on the Williams execution and the press coverage of it?
Well, I mean, first of all, the issues, the larger moral issues of capital punishment and its appropriateness or its relationship to human rights wasn't covered at all, by and large. It was all about, did Tookie do it or not? If he did it, then he deserved to die, because the court said he deserved to die. The arguments offered by the defense against his, against his execution were basically reduced to this idea of redemption. Had he in prison redeemed himself by doing good work for the community, writing books, attempting to counsel people against violence, was that reason enough to spare him from the executioner, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, in his terminating wisdom, decided no, it wasn't enough, and he basically said go ahead and pull the trigger. And, you know, and they did, apparently very painfully, because they couldn't find the nerve when they first did it. It took a long time and the rest. We don't know how he suffered or not, but, you know, the issue, the larger issue of capital punishment and its appropriateness was rarely debated. And when it was debated sort of softies versus pragmatists. You know, softies are kind of people who basically, you know, are tearing up for the underdog, whereas the pragmatists realized that this man had to pay for his crime, and how he paid, of course, has to be discussed. I mean, one of the things I heard, I don't know, you probably don't know this, but apparently in Iraq, under their criminal codes, you cannot kill anybody over the age of 70, okay? In our country, you can't do it under the age of 7 or, you know, whatever, as a youth. But apparently, they're saying that if Saddam is able to stall until he's 70 years old with appeals and the like, he is likely to escape at least legal, you know, execution, which it seems to be what the script calls for already, you know, which is the predetermined outcome of this particular this trial that they're doing there. So, you know, different countries have different laws, but in most of the world, maybe not China or Singapore, but in much of the world that's not authoritarian, which is democratic, capital punishment has been outlawed. And this is one of the issues, of course, the conflict with Europe, who are worried about. They don't want their people being charged in America if they could get the death sentence, because they don't believe in or practice the death sentence in their countries.
We're talking to Danny Schechter today, Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Phone lines open at 333-9455 or the toll-free line 1-800-222-9455. Danny Schechter is the founder and executive editor of MediaChannel.org, an authoritative website if you're interested in media issues, not just in the United States, but around the world. And you'll also find Danny Schechter's web blog there, updated several times a week, isn't it, Danny?
Every day.
Every day,
I mean,
boy.
3,000 words a day. It's kind of insane. But what I'm trying to do in this blog is offer a kind of daily running counter narrative to what we read in the news. So I'm trying to offer other perspectives from newspapers and outlets in other countries and critics in America who can, you know, look at the news through another window, another set of eyes, and then also integrate into that two other elements. One is news about the media and looking at the world of media, and third, comments from our readers. So it's very interactive. A lot of people commenting on what I have to say, or commenting on the news of the day and offering their own perspective. So we're trying to make a populist forum, you know, way in which people can actually, you know, offer their take on what's in the news and get it printed and have a running conversation with each other. And we've been doing that, and it's for 6 years now. But this blog, I started it on September 11, 2001, as the News Dissector. That's how I was referred to when I was on the radio in Boston years ago, Danny Schechter, the News Dissector. So it's sort of just stuck. And, you know, so I've been doing this blog every day. We just had a very exciting thing. We had our kind of an anniversary, sixth anniversary of Media Channel. I don't know how we've survived, but we are. And we honored Helen Thomas, the White House, the dean of the White House Press Corps, with a Truth in Media Award. And she came up from Washington and spoke powerfully and beautifully about, you know, the work I'm doing, but beyond that, about what's going on. And she basically, you know, she said, you know, when you read, you know, our books, I guess yours as well, she said, read it and weep. I do feel that the great journalism we've known is in a state of demise, and even more unfortunate is the timidity and lack of nerve on the part of reporters these days to call them as they see them. That's Helen Thomas. She's been around in the White House since Kennedy came to town in 1961. You know, she's been covering the White House, and she's seen presidents come and go. She's seen press corps come and go. And she's pretty bummed out. She says it's very sad to be in the White House press room and to see the kind of you know, sufferance, the kind of on bended knee approach of a lot of people in the press there.
Well, of course, a recurring theme on Media Matters has been coming from journalists and scholars and critics and people involved in public life with the decrepit state of journalism, oftentimes pointing to the commercial pressures and the political pressures upon the practice of journalism in the United States. One of the things that's really interesting you've written about, Danny, has been the Bush administration's sort of interesting approach to freedom of the press. With regard to things like public broadcasting, enforcement of the Freedom of Information Act, payola pundits, creating fake news. I mean, is this administration, is this just more business as usual for what White Houses do to influence the news, or is the Bush administration sort of carving up some new ground for us?
I think it's new ground. I think that basically they've decided that America doesn't need fact-based information. It needs faith-based information. You know, basically listen to the leader and do as I say kind of information. And the media companies also don't particularly want aggressive journalism. It causes trouble. It creates divisions with people in power that they need, regulatory approvals from and the like. So there's a tendency basically all along, the divide here between the press and the administration, and what was a divide, to try to build a bridge, to try to get along by going along, to figure out a way to let's respect each other, achieve a consensus, et cetera, and so forth. And, under the surface here, of course, you had an extremely aggressive right wing basically insisting that it's my way or the highway, saying that there's only one truth, that's my truth. Anybody else is a traitor or a fool or both. And we have to try to, push, our agenda and let the chips fall where they may. I mean, on Friday night, I was in the office of a congresswoman from Texas doing a film now about the credit squeeze most Americans are dealing with. And we're talking to her about the bankruptcy bill or bankruptcy reform bill and how, in fact, the lobbying cloud of the credit card companies was just overpowering and basically dictated what the new law was. And, of course, most reporting on Congress is about, what happens in Congress. But most of what happens in Congress doesn't happen just by congressmen. It happens because of lobbyists on K Street who basically represent special interests and the like, and that doesn't really get covered. At any rate, I was watching the immigration reform bill, and it was, 11:30 at night on Thursday night because, the congressmen kind of want to go to a recess, want to get out of town, so they kind of wrap up all their business. And there was one measure that was introduced to build a wall on the southern border of the United States, okay, across the whole Mexican border, like the Berlin Wall, to try to keep them out, them being the terrorists or people we don't like or immigrants that are illegal and the like. Okay, so, and in the same bill, there was a provision to allow Michael Chertoff, the head of the Homeland Security, to do a study about building a wall on the Canadian border, okay, across the whole Canadian border, which is the largest unguarded border in American history and in the world, which we are proud of, et cetera, and so forth. And this whole measure, building a wall between the United States and Canada, was introduced, and it was actually approved, okay. But there was no coverage in the United States. The only place I could find any reference to this was in a newspaper in Ottawa, in Canada, as if only Canadians should be concerned about a wall between the United States and Canada. And, you would think this is a preposterous. Billions of dollars would be allocated for this, and yet it virtually got no attention. Maybe it was too late at night. Nobody was up to pay attention to it and all the rest of it. Most of the American media focused on the Mexican border, but barely mentioned or didn't mention the Canadian border.
Now, is that to keep us from going up there or them from coming
here?
Well,
keep them out and keep us in, I guess. Although they kept saying, this is not like the Berlin Wall because the Berlin Wall kept the East Germans in, and nobody wanted to get in there anyway, so it was only. But the reality is that it's a fortress America concept, that somehow we have to put a wall around ourselves that we don't have to relate with to the rest of the world, and of course the rest of the world gets that, and that's why they quote hate us so much because they dislike American policy, but not Americans necessarily.
We're talking to Danny Schechter today in Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. Danny Schechter is the founder and executive editor of MediaChannel.org, author of two new books, The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy, and the other book, When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War. I want to let you all know before we go to the phone lines that the next 2 weeks, December 25th and January 1st, there will not be a Media Matters show here on WILL or anywhere for that matter. We'll have alternative holiday programming on WILL both those days.
Wait a minute. Is it holiday programming or Christmas programming?
Danny, I don't want to get in hot water here. Now, here you are, Danny, poking at me. You know, next day I'm going to have Sean Hannity coming after me. So we will be no programming until 3 weeks from today. We'll be back January 8th with a series of stellar shows, we certainly hope. Let's go to the phone lines in a second. Let me remind folks again the number here, 333-9455, the toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. On that note, to the phone lines. Line 1, Champaign County, you're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Good season, whatever it is. I wanted Danny and you to comment on this. I mean, it's a news flash, but I think it captures something. I'd like for you to talk about the right-wing noise machine and in the context of this latest expose that Bandow was of the Cato Institute was paid for 24 pro deregulation editorials by Abramoff, the guy that's connected all over the place on the Hill. It just seems to me that this one could say it's an aberration that isn't always done, even though our government has done it, and who knows who else is doing it. But the Olin has just shut their doors. But people have been paying for the construction of these ideologies and opinions for quite a while. So maybe this is an aberration in that it's some low level lobbyist with a lot of largesse throwing money at all sorts of things. SWAT teams and training of people in Israel and just all sorts of myriads of things just gone another run amok, I guess. But just to sort of place it in the context of the way...
I think you just have, in a sense. Yes, this guy was hired, and he's probably just one of many people who work on the side freelancing for special interest groups of all kinds. Many journalists in Washington have done that, taken on projects or drafted op-eds or speeches for executives and the like on the quote on the side. They don't seem to feel any there's any problem with that. And I think this is something which should widen and deepen the investigation. But it's also true, if you go to most journalism schools, the communication schools in America, there are three times as many people studying public relations than they're studying journalism, because public relations pays and journalism doesn't, often. So you have, a pervasive blurring of the lines between people who are in the business of offering information and accurate information, people who are in the opinion business, and are basically guns for hire. And that's what we're seeing more and more of. In television, there are three times as many pundits on the air as journalists. I mean, opinions are cheap. Journalism costs money. That's one of the reasons.
All right. Well, caller, anything else?
Well, it goes down to even like Thomas Friedman, on his corporate talk circuit, getting, whatever he gets, $60,000 for talking. I mean, he's people are paid to say what the piper wants to hear. And,
yeah, but why is he on the air? I mean, look, this morning, CBS News, on their talk show on CBS, the weekly show. Who is on? Tom Friedman talking with Bob Schieffer. I mean, they all interview each other. There are no other voices that are on the air. It's the Wall Street Journal. It's NBC. It's various mainstream, mainline journalists who are, on the one hand. On the other hand, as Jeff Cohen of FAIR used to say, the range of discussion is from A to B.
Actually, Danny, to interject, I think Jeff says the range of discussion goes from all the way from GE to GM.
Oh, that's even better.
Well, thanks, and glad to hear your voices. Bye.
Thank you very much, caller. Yeah, Danny, we've got a couple other callers patiently waiting, but before we get to them, I do want to talk about the coverage of the war in Iraq, because that's central to your new book, one of them, and it really underscores a lot of the work at mediachannel.org and a lot of the work you're doing in your blog all the time, and a new campaign that has been launched at your website, Tell the Truth About the War. And what I'd like to do is just ask you, and most our listeners are familiar with, and most Americans are increasingly familiar with, the problems of the press coverage going into the war. Okay, the media blew it, printing, regurgitating basically the argument that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and might use them, that he was connected to 9/11, sort of implying there was some truth to that, or that he was somehow linked with al-Qaeda. But has the press learned its lesson? I mean, are we getting – now is the coverage much more reliable? Can we watch television news and say, okay, now it's safe to go back to CNN or New York Times?
In my book, I basically introduce these initials, AAU, which stands for All About Us. You know, the whole discussion of the war and is all about us. It's about our policies. It's about our rationalizations, our lies, our myths, and the like. And Iraq doesn't even figure into it. What's happened to the Iraqi people? Their destruction, 100,000 plus dead, according to the Lancet study. The way in which that country has been devastated, the way in which it remains occupied and manipulated by U.S. power, the way in which there's been immense corruption and an incredible continuing death toll, a large resistance movement which gets termed the insurgents, and there's no further discussion or exploration of who they are and what they want and why they're fighting and what's inspired this type of resistance movement. You know, the whole coverage of the war, which is the biggest story in the world, the war is virtually not covered except in passing. You know, it's covered in terms of, you know, two Marines were killed today, a bomb went off here, there were 30 Iraqi police recruits killed. There's no sense of, like, how did these things fit together? What's the strategy here? What's going on? How did this come to be? How did this happen? Why? How did we manage to convert what was deemed as a mission accomplished, big victory, into this stunning, protracted, bloodletting exercise? There's no discussion of it. You know, it's all about us. And unfortunately, I think the lack of coverage of the war, not just showing us the gore of war, but telling us and explaining to us the dynamics of what's actually happening there, the reporting on it, you really have to go outside the United States to try to find it. You have to go to Al Jazeera. You have to go to maybe The Guardian in London or Robert Fisk or other journalists who are covering it, to Iraqi bloggers like River Bend, who I read regularly, who's a fantastic observer of life in Baghdad. You have to find other people. You can't just rely on this American media coverage because it tends to march in lockstep with what the government is saying, even though from time to time it exposes things. You know, it exposed Abu Ghraib. It was on CBS News April 2004, even though in July of 2003, Amnesty was releasing videos and reports about abuses in the prison. It took 9 months for those abuses to go from Amnesty to, you know, CBS News and into the American media system. So we're not getting all the news. We're not getting all the information. We're being lied to in an ongoing manner. The frame of the war, the way it was sold, is still the basis for how Bush is selling his ongoing policies through constant repetition, constant upbeat assessments, and revising those assessments, and it's just a way in which media outlets just buy into this, you know. And you don't really have a media here that's telling the truth about the war. And, you know, if you think about it, how would a state-run media system, like we used to see in the Soviet Union, how would that system be any different from what we have today? I mean, yes, there's some more dissent now because public opinion has shifted on the war, and so that no media companies want to be behind the public. They want to be ahead of it to some degree, so they don't want to completely alienate their consumers and their readers and viewers. But by and large, the media is still accepting the logic of the war and reporting it in the framework of that logic.
Our guest today on Media Matters, Danny Schechter, founder and executive editor of MediaChannel.org, author of the new book, When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War, as well as another new book, The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy. You can find his daily blog and a lot more incredible information at MediaChannel.org, a terrific website. We have several patient callers. Let's get to the phone lines right now. Line 4, San Francisco, you're on the air with Danny Schechter, the news dissector.
I'm a big fan of Danny's since hearing him first on Media Matters.
Thank you.
I'm calling because all this is so dire, but I just wanted to interject a little bit of hope. You know, there's no action without reaction, and for so long now we've seen no reaction in our country to all of these terrible things. Paul Krugman, who's the antithesis of Thomas Friedman, has said a long time ago that he couldn't understand why all of these lies coming from this administration could be bypassed by everyone. And but I just wanted to mention, where's the hope? You know, we had Harold Pinter, you know, explaining that this country is a fist. I've read blogs by Stan Goff talking about his U.S. Open letter to the U.S. Congress, where he explains that what the people understand now is power. It's power against the people. And he says that we understand power and we're going to use it. Instead of just ignoring what's happening to us, people have been organizing. People are deciding to do something, and there has been a reaction to that. People like Murtha coming out.
I was in to see Murtha's office when I was in Congress the other night, Thursday night. I walked around the corner from the office I was in into John Murtha's office, and he wasn't there, but his assistants were there. And I said, you know, I just wanted to confirm something with you. Is it true that John Murtha's speech to the Congress was really not about speaking as a Democrat, but really speaking on behalf of the military, the Pentagon, which
yes.
can't speak for itself.
Yes, but I think that everybody in America has
finish.
Been listening and
can I just
reacting in different
sentence?
Ways.
Please let me finish my sentence. Okay?
Yeah, Bob, Mr. Livingston, let Danny go.
Do you mind
finish?
If I add
Never
one
mind.
More thing?
What's
okay,
it?
You go ahead and then we'll let Danny finish. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, I just would mention we are seeing some wonderful things happening. People have been organizing, they're still organizing, and we're seeing, I think, maybe a resurgence of the Green Party. We have Stephen Greenfield, who's going to run against Hillary Clinton. We have Todd Kreishian here in California, who's going to run against Dianne Feinstein. We have others all joining in to help each other now. And I'm going to leave it at that, but I wanted to say that people today are not simply just organizing, but they're doing something with their organization. They're going to actually do something, and that's what causes this terrible, dire situation to change.
Well, thank you very much for calling. And
thank you.
Now, Danny, why don't you continue the point you were making about Representative Murtha?
I was just making a point, you know, that, yes, it's true, there's been a lot of anti-war activism, and a lot of people are speaking out, and that's all to the better. Not clear that they're being heard, but when Murtha spoke out, this unlikely pro-war hawk and, you know, longtime ex-Marine activist on behalf of military spending, when he spoke out, he was really not speaking out so much as a Democrat, but in a way as an ambassador from the Pentagon to the Congress, where the Pentagon, you know, military officers can't really challenge their commander-in-chief. He gave voice to their concerns. And their concern, basically, is that we're losing the war in Iraq. And you know, in speaking so forcefully, the Democrats defended his right to speak, but not what he was saying, you know.
Now, one of the concerns I've seen coming from the intelligence community and the military community is that this war, which is held up primarily as a war against terrorism, ultimately, necessary to protect us from further terrorist attacks, might actually be assisting the terrorists, making them stronger, the terrorist elements, rather than weakening them. What's your sense of that?
Well, you know, I think what's happening is that the occupation breeds resistance. It did in Boston in 1774, you know, in the Boston 1770, in the Boston massacre. It does in Palestine. It does everywhere in the world. Where you have occupation, you have people resisting occupation. And I think there are many people arguing that the best thing the United States could do to actually continue to have influence in Iraq is to dismantle that occupation and not give the resistance a target. That it would be in their interest to do so, but you know, this is perceived, of course, as cutting and running or abandoning the mission or what have you. And there are people who are in the military who are, you know, arguing for all kinds of alternative strategies.
We're talking to Danny Schechter today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. The number here, 333-9455, toll-free 1-800-222-9455, 222-9455. Danny Schechter, author of many books, including the brand new When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War, and The Death of Media and the Fight to Save Democracy. We do have a couple of patient callers. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line two, Farina, thank you for your patience. You're on the air with Danny Schechter, the News Dissector.
Hi, another wonderful show. Thank you, Bob McChesney and Danny Schechter. I've got a little bit of a complicated question. With all the decisions and the reversals and the bad policy and the just relentless turning back of all the things that the Bush administration has done, is there anybody, any book, any website that can document or outline comprehensively from a chronological point of view from when they came into office of these reversals and decisions and obvious mistakes? That would be my first kind of question. And the second one would be, I'm curious, it crosses my mind sometimes that the Carter called it a malaise in the country in the late 70s, that isn't happening now. I truly wonder if there's an increase in suicides and admissions to mental institutions over the kinds of policies and the, you know, political fallout of the Bush administration. And I like your comparison with Stalin as Russia, too. Right, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, caller. Danny, the website or document that sort of has a comprehensive chronology of Bush miscues and errors?
I there have been a number of books that are doing that. By the way, some breaking news coming in now. Even I'm a prisoner of this, is that apparently Ariel Sharon has been wheeled into the hospital in Israel, and being conscious but confused is his state. I always thought he was conscious but confused. At any rate, that's the latest hint from CNN. I don't know. I can't recommend a particular one source tells all. I do think there have been people monitoring this. The Center for American Progress, for example, in Washington, which is a think tank, has a daily progress report about the Bush administration, and they may have a tally there. I don't know.
An archive of some sort.
Yeah.
You know, the second half of his question referred to sort of the notion of a malaise or increase in suicide. And before you address that, I mean, I'm reminded when the Abu Ghraib story came out a year and a half ago, on the U.S. news media, and CBS ran the piece in 60 Minutes. I recall, and you might recall too, Andy Rooney in one of his periodic commentaries on that show, I think it was, or the following week, commented that when he saw the pictures of the prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison by the Americans, he sort of instantly thought of that the United States is possibly in the same zone Rome was in several centuries after Christ. A declining empire, clearly that had lost its way and was going down the tubes. And it was a really stark statement, something you rarely hear in our media. And what's your thinking on that?
Well, you need maybe a deeper historical perspective than the one I have, but there's a lot of people making these parallels and these suggestions today that the American empire is actually on the decline, that the Chinese economy is really what's driving the world economy today, that the century, the American century is over, that we're living in, at a time when the United States is trying to use its military might, impose its will in many countries in the world, threaten others, use its economic institutions to advance its agenda, and is increasingly running into resistance from other countries and other people around the world. I mean, we just saw massive protests in Hong Kong against the WTO. This was hardly reported very widely in England, not reported as widely here that I saw. These issues are organizing, the globalization pressures are organizing a resistance to them. And it's affecting, just think about it in your own work, Bob, on media concentration. We all were talking about how the big media companies were becoming bigger and more dominant. Now, these same media companies seems to be breaking themselves apart to make more money that way. Time Warner has just sold off part of AOL to Google. You have a situation where Viacom, is broken up into two companies. Howard Stern is left to go to, satellite radio from, there's a tremendous shift in our media system. In my book, The Death of Media, I look at that, I basically compare it to the Age of Dinosaurs and how the Age of Dinosaurs gave way to other ages. And that the media age, as we've known it, is being transformed right in front of us, and very few people see it, that there's a dramatic shift. And that's what I write about, and I write about the opportunity that gives us to do the kind of new organizing that's so desperately needed to try to get people to understand that media is central to the fight, central to transforming media is central to the fight for renewing and saving our democracy. And this is something that, you know, Free Press, the organization that you head, and so many other people in the media reform movement understand, and we need to build that movement. This radio show is doing a great job in presenting those issues week after week.
Well, thanks, Danny. Our guest today, Danny Schechter, here on Media Matters. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line one, Champaign, you're on the air with Danny Schechter, the news dissector.
Yes, thank you. Your earlier comment about the proposal to build a wall across the Canadian-United States border seems like another example of life imitating art. It reminds me very much of Margaret Atwood's book, The Handmaid's Tale, in a not-too-distant future when a Christo-fascist regime is taken over in the United States and does build a barrier across the Canadian border very much to keep people in. In fact, the part of the story is how the Handmaid's trying to escape to Canada.
Well, maybe that's where they got the idea from. Fiction and faction seem to be merging. I mean, it's not surprising. One of the things that surprised me was when they had this discussion in Congress, and I was watching it carefully on C-SPAN, and I was speaking to the congresswoman's aide, and he's basically saying, yeah, well, the vote is about to happen, and basically what they all do is they look down at their BlackBerries, and the House leaders, the whip or the, you know, Republican leadership, tells them how to vote. So basically nobody's listening to anybody else. It's just like, some sort of orchestrated, machine that, you know, that's running there. So it looks like democracy, it talks like democracy, but it isn't democracy, something else.
You know, Danny, if I can follow up in that, you travel around the world a lot. You've covered the world. International politics is your beat. What do most Americans from their news media not understand about the world? What are they most confused about? What are the things that jump out at you that's just the greatest level of ignorance, the most serious level of ignorance, and what sort of issues among them?
I mean, I was just in the Persian Gulf in Dubai at an Arab and World Media Conference, and, you know, you listen to the way in which people feel humiliated by American power, as if they don't exist, as if they are just the Arabs, you know, some sort of stereotype group where their ideas, their culture, their hopes, their aspirations just don't register, you know, in America, that they go to America, nobody in America even knows where they're from, knows what their countries are, or their cultures are. You know, a gap, a tremendous ignorance gap. You know, we're living in an underdeveloped country when it comes to understanding the world. It was just a report on illiteracy growing in the United States. This is an indictment of our educational and media systems, and it's a tragedy because, you know, there are so many people who admire, you know, the values of America as they understand them, but find that the American media is often very hostile to them. They don't trust it. They don't believe it. And, you know, now many Americans don't either.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. Line four, Farina, Illinois, yet again. What's happening in Farina? We're getting lots of callers down there. You're on the air with Danny Schechter.
Hi, Bob. We just love you down here. We're going to miss you for 2 weeks. Danny, it's always great to hear you.
Oh, thank you so much.
I saw you first on Out There. I love that show.
Oh, great. Thank you. I'm still out there, you know.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Bring me in. Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to ask you, what would be the most censored news story going on right now and what we need to know about it? And also, you mentioned that if Bush had done this surveillance thing, it was impeachable, and I understood he actually admitted it yesterday. So what were your comments on that?
You know, for it to be impeachable, there have to be members of Congress with the guts to really take him on and challenge him. And, you know, we haven't really seen that. We see a lot of waffling, not a lot of confrontational spirit. So that's that. The one story I'm working on right now about credit, the way every American is living beyond their means, about billions of dollars being transferred from the pockets of ordinary Americans into banks and credit card companies and the like, the way these companies control our Congress, All of this is, you know, worse than the Teapot Dome scandal, in my opinion, is a very serious problem that really isn't being covered well, in part because there's so much credit card advertising on television, the Super Bowl, et cetera. I was just at a church, Bob, in Virginia, a black Baptist church, and the preacher has debt revivals, and his slogan is, "You can't serve the master and MasterCard."
Our guest today on Media Matters, the witty Danny Schechter, also the author of When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War, and The Death of Media in the Fight to Save Democracy. Danny Schechter is the founder and executive editor of MediaChannel.org. Danny, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so I'd like you to talk a little bit, if you would, about the campaign that is now being highlighted on the MediaChannel.org website, Tell the Truth About the War.
Can you talk about... we have two. One is keep the focus on Katrina to try to you know, focus on the cover-up of what's happened and the lack of reporting on what's happening in, you know, in New Orleans. You know, only one school open in the whole city.
Please talk about that first, then. Absolutely.
But the campaign against the war coverage is something I think that can unite Americans across the spectrum. I think it's something that people on the left, the thing about media reformers, all groups should come together on a campaign to actually take on and challenge our media to tell the truth about the war. Already major media companies, New York Times, Washington Post, even the network news presidents have all admitted they did not tell us the truth about the WMDs. Now we have to try to say, tell us the truth about the war and really put it in their face. There's a great demoralization within the media. All the journalists I've spoken to, many of them, you know, don't have the same arrogance they once had, the same sense of certitude and righteousness. Many of them are vulnerable on this issue. They're willing to talk about it. And I think we have to engage them, not just to denounce them, not just to come off as media bashers, but actually to try to call on them to do the job they're supposed to do. And this is why I think one of the things we can do, and have a piece up on BuzzFlash tomorrow on a media channel, which is we can honor the journalists and the people in our midst who are doing a good job of telling the truth about a lot of things in American society. People like Helen Thomas, for one, Bob McChesney, and John Nichols at Free Press, and others who have been consistently trying to expose all of these media wrongs, but also give us a vision of what we need, what kind of society we want, what kind of media we want. That's what my book, The Death of Media, is. It's about all the media manifestos over the years trying to offer another glimpse of what's missing in our media, what we need to fight for. I think if we can come together around some sort of program like this, I think many more people would join, you know, this fight if they had focused goals. And if you can take the 60% of the people against the war right now and kind of marry them to the media reform movement, I think we can actually reach a tipping point. We can get more people engaged on this issue. And that's what we're trying to do at Media Channel. But we want to work with others, with Free Press, with, you know, all the other groups that have been out there and are out there doing a great job. And if we can work together and form a coalition, we can win, possibly, or we can at least achieve some goals. If you remember the fight against the FCC media rules, you know, you had the NRA and Michael Moore on the same side.
Now, Danny, as for the Katrina campaign, I know that in the African-American community in the United States, this is a very serious, this is still the number one issue with a bullet in this country.
We lost an American city. I mean, this is unbelievable. Not only an American city, but a center of American culture, of the blues, of jazz, of, you know, so many of the things that made America so unique in the world.
But President Bush said he's going to rebuild it, so he'll go back down there and party again. What's happening?
Yeah, well, it's not happening. You know, it's a lot of money's not there. People are still in hotels. They're still, finding terrible problems. The bankruptcy law basically made it impossible for many of the people of the Katrina victims to file for bankruptcy, to try to get some relief and a fresh start.
In a word, Danny Schechter, how has the press coverage in the last month or two of Katrina been going?
Spotty, sporadic, insufficient, and in some ways criminally negligent.
Our guest today, the one, the only Danny Schechter, the news dissector, founder and executive editor of MediaChannel.org, which you can find on the web right there at www.mediachannel.org, where he has a daily blog, author of many books, including the two new books, The Death of Media and The Fight to Save Democracy, and When News Lies, Media Complicity in the Iraq War. Yeah. Danny Schechter, Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm dissector at mediachannel.org if anyone wants to continue the conversation. Thanks again, Bob, for having me on, and happy holidays to you and your family and to your family of listeners.
All right. Thank you so much, Danny Schechter, and I want to thank you listeners, too. I'll see you in 3 weeks. And on behalf of Brett Polson, our technical director, and Andrea Boyle, our producer, have a happy holiday season and a good end of 2006, and see you January 8th, 2006. No, end of 2005. All right. Bye-bye.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including International Galleries, Weber and Thies Law Offices, and ABC Billiards, an authorized Brunswick dealer specializing in pool tables, custom cues, and game room furniture.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, cloudy with scattered snow showers, the high in the mid-20s with north winds around 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 2 degrees and northwest winds around 10 miles per hour this evening, becoming light. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high around 20 degrees and west winds around 10 miles per hour. This is WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. 580 on your AM dial and on the internet at will.uiuc.edu. It's 2 p.m. The Tavis Smiley Show is next.